The Horizontal Well Control Act of 2011 required studies be conducted to gain a more profound understanding of all that's entailed in the natural gas drilling that's sweeping northern West Virginia. Those reports are coming due, and legislators are hearing from scientists who have been looking into the matter. Glynis Board reports.
Two major reports are being discussed in Charleston this week. One looks at air and noise pollution, while another considers water use related to horizontal well drilling. Michael McCauley is the interim chairman of the Department of Occupational and Environmental Health from the School of Public Health at West Virginia University. He presented recommendations based on the air, noise, and light study he published earlier this summer. McCauley says the major surprise his study revealed were copious amounts of benzene detected by his air monitors. The monitors were set up at the current legal setback distance of 625 feet from the center of the drilling pads. His report notes that at one site, benzene levels were detected of up to 85 parts per billion. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health recommends workers regularly exposed to 100 parts per billion wear respiratory protection. So why worry about benzene? Well, substantial quantities of epidemiologic, clinical, and laboratory data link benzene to aplastic anemia, acute leukemia, and bone marrow abnormalities.
Now, we suspect that benzene may be coming, in fact, from diesel engines, because a lot of fracking sites have truck traffic going in and out of them. And also, during the actual hydraulic fracturing itself, there are a number of diesel engines that are sitting on the pad being run at high rates.
Based on his findings, McCauley made suggestions to lawmakers. McCauley says the current required setback distance is a regulation that should be abandoned. The aim of the rule is to protect people in the vicinity from exposure, but he says an arbitrary number won't achieve that given the variability of topography and considering that pollution doesn't always come from the center of the pad. A better idea? Control the emissions. To that end, McCauley submits that monitoring real-time emissions is likely the smartest, most effective tool to employ, especially around sensitive areas like houses, hospitals, and schools. Monitoring would allow high levels of pollutants to be addressed immediately by the people controlling the operation. And his recommendation for noise pollution? Control the noise. That's the sound of a horizontal drilling pad in Marshall County. That's about half a mile away.
We were seeing short-term exposures exceeding 100 decibels around some of these sites. 100 decibels is kind of the level of a rock band. So you don't want a rock band outside your bedroom window. Although the long-term exposures were below 70 decibels on average for the sampling period that we saw, there were still levels that exceeded 70 decibels for brief periods of time. But those brief periods of time can be a concern, particularly if they're disturbing sleep or if they're really loud.
An expert in public health, McCauley explains that 55 decibels is enough to interrupt sleep, which in turn could result in hypertension or high blood pressure, already endemic in the state, especially in the northern panhandle. He says noise pollution needs to be taken into account when constructing these sites and also when considering the traffic patterns to and from them. So switching gears here, water use is another area of concern for legislators. Evan Hansen, president of Downstream Strategies, conducted a study on water use in hydraulic fracturing operations in and around the state. He and his colleagues set out to analyze water use data provided by natural gas drillers to the Department of Environmental Protection, data they're required to provide as per the 2011 law. Hansen says, according to the data, the average Marcellus well in West Virginia injects about 5 million gallons of water into the wells as fracking fluid. 8% of that comes back up. He says the DEP and the industry should be applauded for adopting new recycling practices, as about 75% of that flowback is now being reused. He says the remainder is disposed of in deep well injections.
Even though about 3/4 of the flowback fluid is being reused and recycled, which is great, that's only substituting for about 10% of the water withdrawals. So while great progress has been made in increasing the amount of recycling, that's not taking care of the vast quantities of water that still need to be withdrawn from West Virginia streams.
Hansen adds that tracking this waste should continue to be a priority. West Virginia already sees 100 million gallons of wastewater each year. And in Pennsylvania, across the border where the industry is significantly more developed, they see nearly a billion gallons of waste each year. Hansen also sees several areas of improvement regarding data collection and reporting requirements. He says the quality of the data should be improved. He and his team found many mistakes and suggests the DEP take steps to improve industry reporting. He adds many operators also aren't submitting data within required timeframes. But Hansen says his biggest concern is that West Virginia law only requires operators to report flowback water. It's a different story in Pennsylvania, where flowback water only accounts for 38% of reported waste.
In West Virginia, because only flowback fluid is reported and the other types of waste are not reported, we still don't really have a handle on how much waste is being generated and where it's going. So we're still operating in some uncertainty about what's going on in the real world, and that's not a great place to be if you're trying to get the right policies in place to protect water resources.
Hansen says his report will be made available on October 30th. That day, he will also conduct an online webinar explaining his findings, and that webinar is open to the public. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.